Greetings and welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod, a sometimes funny, trying to be smart podcast covering all things new and classic Trek. Are you guys stuck in a time loop? I'm your captain, Mariah Gossett. With me on the view screen, we have
Clyde Haynes. No more time bugs.
Exterminator. And joining us once again this week, filling in for Paul, thank you so much, is Jesse Earl. Jesse, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here again. This is definitely my first time doing this podcast. I've not done this before.
Never.
Once I will not break the temporal prime directive. I don't know what you're talking about.
We've gone back in time to I don't know when, but tonight we are discussing Face the Strange, directed by Lee Rose, written by Sean Cochran. Before we jump into this temporal loop of memory lane, Clyde, can you tell people how they can like support the pod or maybe chat with us tonight? What are some things they should know?
There's a lot of things. We like to be interactive, so we don't want to just be one of those pods where you just listen to us. We want to hear from you. So there are a couple ways you can do that. If you want to support the pod, just hang out. You can kind of come over to our Patreon and just for, I don't know, is it like one and then one? Oh, yeah, it's $2 an episode. Just $2 an episode. You can be part of our Patreon crew, and that gives you access to our Slack channel where we hang out and chat and talk about all things Trek and do watch alongs, which is a lot of fun. It's like you watch and you chat. It's a great time. So you can be a part of our community. And if you're watching us live tonight, then please feel free to type capital P, capital O, capital D, capital pod in the chat. And we'll take a look at your musings, your revelations, your thoughts, your critiques, all of that stuff. Just keep it kind and we'll take a look at it. We might even read it out loud. And the other thing that's nice about our Patreon is if you can't participate in our live show here in YouTube, what you can do is in our Slack channel, there is a messages from the menagerie. So you can let us know your thoughts about the show in advance and we can read them live here on the show.
Indeed. I'm really excited. I thought I would just jump in with this is a message from the menagerie for last week after the pod, but Sarah shared with us really late to this, but wanted to concur with the others. Wilson Cruz was incredible. Glad he got a chance to shine this episode. Thanks, Sarah, for chiming in over in the message of the menagerie. And we'll get into this week's episode in just a few minutes. I think it might be time, you know, I have a special, if you're watching, or if you're listening, rather, you might want to jump over and watch the pod on YouTube just because I have a very special video that I'm about to play from our co-host who has been on an away mission for a while. So we'll check this one out. Hot freaks! So Paul sent us a custom hot freaks video. That's funny. Him having a moment with the stove.
Nice stove, though. I kind of like that stove. And it was clean, too. Like
very
clean. Mm-hmm. I mean, very clean stove. Way too much to let you guys see what it looks like. There's not a chance of that happening.
So way to go, place where Paul is staying this week. Yeah, let's go ahead and jump into some of our hot freaks this episode. Jesse, what did you think?
I adored this episode. What is shocking to me, especially about this whole season, but in this episode in particular, is that they didn't know that this was the final season going into it, because this feels like a really, really good kind of, it kind of reminded me very much of the episode Shattered from Star Trek Voyager, which also felt like a celebratory episode of all of Star Trek Voyager at that point, because it was also Star Trek Voyager's final season. So this just felt like a good celebration of all of Discovery and how far they've come. And yet at the same time, and it's probably because they didn't actually know at the time that they were filming that this was going to be the final season, it had a lot of restraint too. Like they could have very easily done, like, you know, the Captain Pike cameo. I mean, Anson Mount's right there. He's probably a hop, skip, and a spore jump. I just came up with that phrase last week on this podcast, and I want to use it again right over on Strange New World set. So they could have easily gotten him. Would have been nice to see him or Jason Isaacs as Lorca again. But I do actually appreciate that it didn't necessarily have all those nostalgia plays and being like, ooh, look at this cameo or this thing. It felt like a good send up emotionally and thematically, and also of the characters of where Burnham has come throughout this entire series so far. And also continuing that on to Rainer as sort of like a parallel to her. So yeah, this was just an absolutely fun one. Felt like classic Star Trek and yet also very Discovery at the same time. And I adored it. I really did love this one.
Indeed. Totally agree. Clyde, your thoughts?
I mean, I don't know. It wasn't even halfway through the episode where I started texting you, Mariah, and Paul, and I was just like, whoa! And it was really about the moment where they jump in the future, and I hear the music, and I immediately know that this is a reference to Calypso. Something I feel like we've been wanting for like 5 seasons. And Jesse, to your point, they gave it to us without knowing that this was the last season. Like that to me, I knew at that point this was going to be an incredible episode. And so I loved it. Like it was very Discovery. And it to me, this episode is definitely going to be one of my favorites. It's, you know, Mariah, you like to say there's always a timey-wimey episode. This has got to be one of my favorite timey-wimey episodes. And it almost feels as though Discovery took a good look at Strange New Worlds last season and said, challenge accepted. And because we're getting some really good stuff week after week. I mean, this is what, episode 4 at this point? And I think all 4 of them have been really, really good episodes. So I'm amazed and I'm excited. Like this was, we're going to get into it, but whew, this was a good one.
Yeah, I agree. I would love to see if there was like an addition of some add-on comedy writers this season, because I feel like there's been some really great beats added onto the episodes that just feel like some moments of levity, like the fact, like Burnham's reaction to every time when she's just like, oh, this is another crazy one, was like, I loved. And yeah, it reminded me of like the Harry Mudd episode that we got earlier in the show. And like, I know we all really enjoy that episode. And I, as you pointed out, Clyde, I love a Jeremy Baramee timey-wimey episode. I think it's one of the fun parts of being in sci-fi is playing around with time travel and the rules of time travel, because I just think it's so fun to have to be like, wait, what can we do here? What can we not do here? Ah, and it's like a fun sandbox to play in. Also, Jet Reno, like yes. The best one-liners. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll dive into it. Let's check out some of these messages from the menagerie. Karen says, I really enjoyed this. I gotta say, I'm now convinced that they thought cancellation was entirely possible. It reminded me of all the other last season time splinters, like Parallels, Shattered. We get to see Arium and Bryce. It feels like a really send-off ep. I agree. I would be interested to see what were pickups and what were originally in the script, because I know they shot some extra stuff at the end, but it could have just been like someone had a really great time writing this episode. Carmen says, I really enjoyed this episode. Love seeing Arium and Bryce. I feel like this episode made the new first officer, Rainer, much more part of the crew. And that scene with Book, Burnham, hot, fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji. Karen replies, oh man, Book shirtless, fire emoji.
So I got a couple comments off that one. So the serious one first. My favorite Arium episode ever. This made me actually understand who Arium was and why she was important to the crew. Like this was just, I was like, oh, so now I'm really getting Arium and not this love her before we kill her episode, right? Get to know her, love her, and then we're gonna kill her and try and understand while everybody else is heartbroken because you don't get it. If I got something like this prior to that, my emotions would have been different. So that was my first thought. The other thing is, I mean, I'm a secure person, but oh my goodness, I'm looking at Book like, man, I just want to be you. Like, just for like 15 minutes, just like, I want to take my shirt off and be like that. Like, my goodness, that was impressive. I was like, is there a men's health article or somewhere with your workout routine and your diet? Because I'll buy it.
Just talk to David Ajala at a con sometime. Yeah.
Be like, hey, can you drop the fitness regime? And then finally, Kyun says, this is easily my favorite episode of the season and possibly of the entire series. It's a love letter to the fans who've gone through the show for 5 seasons to see the growth of Michael and the rest of the crew. Yeah, I like this comment from Q. I'm pretty sure safe to say, just like Wilson Cruz, they both work out.
A little bit. Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Too many beautiful people on Discovery.
It's a lot of beautiful people. Speaking of beautiful people who love each other, Maul and Locke is how we start the episode with a classic bag exchange, the baddies at the lakefront. I was like, oh, the Toronto lakefront. Here we are again. I thought it was a fun play of the genre of like the twisty mustache twirly villain moment where they're like, aha, we're here to get the thing to make everyone's life bad. But I thought the walls were closing in line was a little too on the nose for me. But what did y'all think of our kind of cold open here with Maul and Locke?
I'll say it made Maul interesting for me. Maybe like really interesting. Like I was like, oh, the whole dialogue about here's the poison that you used for the emerald chain against people that they used on people like me was like, time out. This is interesting. There's some backstory here. There's some death. Tell me more. Like that was a moment where I'm like, not just a villain, three-dimensional character. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to wonder if Maul is going to be this character that is actually really rich. And I'm like, okay, you just sprinkle it in there. Don't do that thing where you sprinkle, 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 and then you dump it. Like develop this some more. But I'm very much intrigued. I don't want to say for the first time, but this is the most I've been intrigued about these two. Like they've been cool, but like really wanting to know their origin story and their backstory and what happened. Now I feel like I'm starting to get invested.
Yeah, I'm about the same. I do like the little sprinkling of backstory here, but it is a little to a degree telling, not showing, because it's just like, aha, here's a little piece of my backstory to me that relates to this going on right now. That being said, I'm intrigued in their relationship, but it does still come across as a bit, and it not necessarily in a bad way, but this bit tropey in that like the Bonnie and Clyde, like two lovers on the run from the law, the walls are closing in quite literally, as you say. So I want to get some more. Like there's definitely meat here and I can tell that there's meat here, but it's not enough yet for me to really be excited or enthusiastic about them. That being said, and this is just a potential spoiler, but also just a theory that Sean Farrick over at Trek Culture came up with. But considering we hear a lot about the Breen this season, there is a theory out there that Locke is a Breen because we've never seen what the Breen look like.
Oh, that would be super interesting because we have never seen them without helmets. That is very true.
No, I take no credit for that. That was Sean Farrick's idea at Trek Culture. I'm like, ooh, that makes way too much sense. So,
yeah, I like that. That's very interesting. They've definitely been peppering in a lot of Breen talk the last couple of episodes, and I find that's interesting. And I was going to kind of pose the question, like, with all of that, do we think that theory is really like tingling my brain spaces? I was like, I wanted to pose the question, are the Breen going to end up being sort of like our big baddie towards the end of this season? And is it possible we're sort of setting up the Breen to be larger characters going into something like the Academy series where, maybe they want some sort of ongoing conflict to similar to what we had for like DS9.
Mm-hmm. I hope that that's the case. It feels very much like they're setting them up for this season. Like there's been a lot of name drops and it feels very similar to stuff that we did with like the Emerald Chain in season 3. The species 10C, we got like little hints of throughout that season. They were kind of the inciting incident of that whole thing, but like it's just kind of Discovery's MO that where they're like they'll see little bits and pieces throughout the season and then sort of they'll be coming a bigger deal in the back half of the season. So I hope that that's the case. The other thing too, I hope if we do get more the Breen, because they haven't talked about as like a big power in at this point. It's not the Breen. What are they calling themselves now? It's like it used to be the Breen like Confederacy or something. I forget what it was in the DS9.
Oh, yeah.
They have a different name now. But anyways, the Breen. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest critiques I've had of Discovery post going into the 32nd century is that like the geopolitical context is very vague. At this time, like we get a sense of the Federation and what the Federation is doing politically throughout all of the show so far. But in terms of what everything else beyond the Federation looks like, kind of been vague. So I'm hoping that with the Breen coming in, we get a little bit more sense of like what are the actual politics and powers going on. That's me being a huge like, I want to see the map of the different groups sort of nerd. So
I need the map at the beginning of the book, please.
Exactly. So,
well, pretty quickly we get the time bug messing up everything for everyone. I do love our callback to the tardigrade DNA and seeing just like, Rainer just has to just like accept a lot of these like crazy small details of like Discovery's history, like without questioning anything. And I thought that was like, I don't know, to Kian's point, like a fun way to pay homage to like everything we've all been through with Discovery. I enjoyed seeing a lot of the old uniforms and I really liked that this felt like a great episode for Anthony Rapp. Cause I feel like the last couple seasons that character's really kind of been pushed into this, just like, I'm a parent figure, which is great, but like, I don't know. It was such a fun, he was our original grumpy character, you know? Mm-hmm. And so having him paired up with Rainer, I thought was very smart. What did y'all think of Stamets in this episode?
I thought this was a great vehicle for Stamets. It made sense, right? The whole idea that they were in this time loop, but he's in it too. I mean, again, kind of going back to the whole Harry Mudd thing, this time he's not alone. And so it's the team up. I just thought it was a great opportunity for him to shine, because I think when we first started the series, it felt like Anthony Rapp was really a focal point, right? Mm-hmm. Like he was, there was just something about him, like he was kind of a main character. And somewhere along the way, the cast got bigger and it felt like he became more of an ensemble character. And I'm a fan. So seeing him get an opportunity to really kind of show his stuff, like, again, it's kind of like, man, they didn't know, but everybody's getting a solo. Like this is that piece of music where you let your star step out a little bit and shine, you know, and we got to see Wilson Cruz. Now we got to see a little bit of Anthony Rapp, not to mention, you know, Tig Notaro. Like we got to see her a little bit more this week, you know? And, you know, I think even in the first couple episodes, we got a little bit more of Book. This episode, we got Book's abs. So, I mean, they needed their own like their space in the show. Yeah. It's a full episode of Book's abs.
Character development right there. Yeah.
Right there. Literally development, like washboard development. I love to see more of Anthony Rapp kind of running around the ship, doing his thing. I thought it was a great episode for him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think his one-liners this episode were also really great. Like the sport breach line was really great. So I'm beginning to worry my crew doesn't know what a sport breach is. I was a bit surly pre-tardigrade DNA. I thought that was really great. But yeah, the biggest thing for me is again, it was kind of showing his development, like going, because the episode's so very clearly evoking magic to make the sanest man go mad, which is the time loop episode from season one, where he also played an integral part. Yeah. And I recently watched that episode for some retro reviews I was doing, and that was like the first episode where he kind of opened up a little bit and became kind of more friendly towards Burnham in that episode. And seeing like that episode and then this one, you can kind of see how he's grown from those points to be a very caring person, and pairing him up with Rainer, who is such a great juxtaposition throughout this entire episode of Discovery as a show, towards Stamets as a character who's also grown to be less surly, as he says, but also towards Burnham, who is very clearly They say sort of have a parallel in from season one, and that is very clearly evoked at the end when he sort of talks her down. So like I think like Stamets getting like a good moment with Rainer in this episode to kind of point out like, yeah, you don't have to take this all on your own. Like Stamets kind of was way back in season one. Mm-hmm. I thought was a really great way to use Rainer as that sort of bouncing off point. So yeah, I thought Stamets just had a lot of fun, very much opened up, but also had the best scene of the episode with Tig Notaro, where she's like, are you in a time loop right now? Nah, just kidding. I'm like, I bet Tig, I want Jet to have totally known he was in time loop and being like, I'm not gonna mess with the time director, but I will fuck with him a little bit.
Yeah, totally. I know. I watched on the Ready Room, you know, Will Wheaton, of course, was like, oh, do you think Tig played it like like Reno knows, or in just like a I'm messing with you way? And Anthony was essentially like, you should ask Tig that question because I don't think she'll answer you about it.
That's really great.
Which I'm just like, correct. Yeah, that's like the most Jet Reno way. I have I loved the cameos that we did get this episode. I had wished, I was like, it would have been hilarious for an Ash Tyler, just because I think it would have made so many people so mad, and I would have loved like it.
That's the one we get. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no, I
Lorca. You think you're going to get a Lorca? No. Ash Tyler's about to come in here.
That would have drove me nuts. It was nice to see Bryce back, and I was like, yeah. Bryce. Mm-hmm. Nice, very cool. Like that whole going back to early Discovery, Burnham versus Burnham, that whole dynamic was just really well done. Because I think so often what we get is we get this whole Back to the Future time directive where you can't see your past self. And usually what we get is we get Marty McFly watching Marty McFly from across the street, ducking behind a crate or something and then trying to interact. I can't remember how often we get, nope, I'm going to run into myself. We're going to have a complete full out fight.
Yeah.
And then just when I think I win, they're going to show back up. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that was interesting. And I don't know how often we get that kind of in our sci-fi timey-wimey episodes. So I love the cameos. You know, I bring that up because you mentioned cameos, Mariah, and I'm like, season one, Shaniqua Martin Green's haircut, like that's a cameo. this was a great episode. It's a love fest for me.
So. Totally, and I mean, I thought the fight choreography was really smart, and I know they've talked a lot about how they worked really hard to make sure that season one Burnham fight style was going to be different from current season Burnham's fight style, and you know, how do you manage that with the stunt performer? And I thought they did an incredible job shooting it, and I mean, again, talking about tour de forces and getting your actors to really flex their muscles is like Shaniqua Martin Green having to play both sides of that complete journey, essentially, in this episode, I thought was phenomenal.
Yeah, I was about to call it out if you two didn't, because like Shaniqua Martin Green's just acting throughout this was wonderful, especially in that scene, like just the way she held herself as both Burnhams was, you could, like, I buy that as season one Burnham. I remember how the character was, that sort of like stiff and very closed off, and you can see where she is now, and you just could sense like the more just openness with her, like her body and the way she talked and carried herself, and yet they both felt like a cohesive character who went from A to Z. That was really fantastic, and you see like the like just that like how kind of broken season one Burnham is when she's like, oh yeah, I would never buy that. I would get the captain's pips. Mm-hmm. So like that was a great moment. So yeah, I think that was probably another standout. Like this episode is chock full of standout sequences, but that was a great one.
Yeah, very much in particular. I wanted to ask y'all, what would you have to say to you to believe that you were from the future?
I'd probably just buy it instantaneously and be like, yeah. Yeah, okay. No, I mean, I've read enough sci-fi. Cool. Yeah. Say something I wouldn't know.
Yeah. I'm probably much more of like the sci-fi nerd where it's like, I'm holding, how many fingers am I holding behind my back? I'm thinking of a number. And I've been like, you know, I would ask myself more comedy-esque questions, and then it would just, then I'd be like, dude, like it would just be, I'd be hanging out with myself like, so you're from the future. What happens here? I can't tell you. Come on. Like it would be all that.
Yeah, I would very much be trying to break all of the rules. Yeah, I don't know what I would actually ask myself. Probably something, yeah, really, really silly. But I think I watched too much horror, and at some point I'd be like, but are you like an evil version of me though? Like, are you like evil twin Mariah? Now I have concerns.
My bigger worry would not be meeting my future self. It would be meeting my past self. That would be the bigger concern, because there's, knowing me, there's so much I'd want to say, and all of it would destroy the timeline. Like it would absolutely. But my first sense, I would just start to see myself disappearing.
Yeah, right. Like, oh no, I did all the wrong things.
Invest in GameSpot for a specific amount of time.
Yes. There's all those little things. It's like, hey, remember when you thought that Netflix wasn't gonna go boom? Hey, rethink that one. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know that place you get DVDs mailed from? Yeah, toss some money over there. I wanted to ask y'all, so by the end of this episode, I thought, Jesse, you made a great point of like kind of the parallels of Rainer to first season Michael Burnham, and kind of like the growth that has to happen for both of these characters in this episode, and kind of the larger perspective we're all getting, particularly on Burnham. And it does feel like we get Rainer landing a little bit less fish out of watery by the end of this episode, like kind of seeing like, oh, okay, I see your tactics, and I see how I can meld your like Burnham's more emotionally in touch tactics in with his, which is funny when we think about like old school, like Vulcan-y, no emotions Burnham at the beginning, right? And where we are now. But do we, I've enjoyed the pieces of the fish out of water elements to Rainer's character. And is this too soon to fully immerse him in this world? Or is this like, I don't know. It's hard without knowing where we're going, but I'm like a little worried. I hope he stays still a little grumpy, as weird as that sounds.
I mean, I don't think he'll lose his grumpiness. What I liked most about this episode is it kind of gave him a bit of vulnerability. Because when he's giving that speech at the end to season one Burnham, he's like, you deserve to be here. Like you feel like you don't deserve it. You feel like you screwed up. You feel like you have to earn that redemption, but you will, and you do deserve to be here. And he's speaking to himself, I think, too, in that moment. Like everything he's saying is stuff that he kind of needs to hear himself. And I think that was really good at this point in his arc, because again, I'm going to compare this to Shaw from Picard season 3. Like a lot of that season with that character, who I think is mostly comparable to Rainer, is that like, it's just, oh, he's an asshole. Oh, he's an asshole. Oh, he's an asshole. Like every beat, he's always an asshole, and he learns to be slightly less of an asshole. And this episode does have that, but it gave us a vulnerability to him in his actions that I really thought was, gave him more nuance and more layers than just that repeated beat over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing too is, you know, a lot of what we've seen this season so far with him, like last episode, is him not integrating with the crew super well. And as you said, Mariah, this is the first one where, you know, he's having a disagreement with Burnham about the crew. But as soon as there's a situation, he like snaps into action, like listens, like he's not like they have disagreements throughout the episode here and there, but overall they work together really, really well. And I appreciated that. And I appreciated that they bounced off of each other in a moment of crisis. And that it wasn't just like, oh, well, I want to do it my way, so we should do it this way. Like there was, you know, it was a good melding of that. And I thought that was also just a really great way to depict him. So yeah, Rainer has been great. Like I know last week we had some disagreement about how much we liked him. I am personally think he's fantastic, and I've adored his addition to the show. And this episode continues that for me. So
I would say I see him slightly differently. It's not that I don't like him. I don't know that I thought he was getting there too fast. My take on Rainer is kind of old school. right? Old school military, old school leadership. And, you know, I work in kind of learning and development, so I'm constantly reading or presenting leadership topics. And if you go back and think about how leadership has changed over, say, like the last just 20, 30 years, it used to be so much about positional authority, right? I am the boss, so you listen to me, right? And that's where Rayner is a bit. Like when you think about how he runs a ship, how he makes his decisions, I'm the captain. Like ultimately, just be quiet and do what I ask you to do. I'm the center of this. Well, I think that was, if we look back at our own kind of industry, like that's where it was. Now, when you look at how people are led and how people are managed, it's much more built on emotional intelligence. It's much more social. It's much more relational. It's less about kind of positional authority and more about relational kind of influence. And I think what he started to see was, especially in that kind of last scene with Reese, was you're right, Jesse. He's always listening. It's not that he's not like engaged. He hears and can regurgitate everything. And I think he saw that, hey, I'm going to tell you like ships, like this is why you like it. Part of that was almost manipulation. Like he's just regurgitating that one thing that he heard in 20, when he gave you 20, mm-hmm. 20 words or less. Right. But then he started to realize that that wasn't enough to really influence people, to really move people. It wasn't enough. So I felt like he got the idea. I'm not convinced he knows how to make that step yet. So to me, he's just on the precipice of going, okay, what I know is it's not the whole thing. It's not like I throw it out, but that's not enough. And now I wonder if we're going to see him start to develop this empathy, this, you know, social emotional intelligence that's going to kind of transform him as a captain. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he figured out yet. Dude, you got demoted. They put you in early retirement. So whatever you were doing wasn't working. Right. So I know what I'm doing. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And I think Chippy brings up an interesting point here. I think we also learn how much and why the burn is always at the top of Rayner's mind. And to me, that's such an interesting parallel to Burnham's like battle of the binary stars that we get kind of the repercussions of in this episode, where she's just like, you know, I can't mess up again. Like, I can't let you take over this ship. I've seen what happens when this happens. And I thought that was a really smart way to sort of play that. And I hope we get a little bit more of Rayner's, backstory. And like, you know, I feel like we've gotten his 20 words or less, you know, about him, and hopefully we get to see more of it. Cause I think that'll also like, I think that was the switch for Shaw, right? Is like, once you start, you know, that Wolf 359 monologue was such a huge moment for that character. And so I'll be interested to see when that moment kind of strikes for Rayner. I wanted to come back to the potential Calypso connection moment. Cause I too, Clyde, like you mentioned, as soon as that music hit, I was like, oh, is this finally, are we going to get this moment? They're going to come out on the bridge and it's what's his name dancing out there. This is going to be so cool. And it's interesting that they tied that era of Zora to this like Breen takeover. And so I'm like, interesting. So are they saying Calypso was in this particular timeline, or is it just a little bit of a baity switchy? Like you think it's that timeline, but it's just like, that's what happens to Zora when she gets real sad and is like a ship at sea eventually.
She just plays a lot of sad old music.
Zora.
I'll tell you my assumption. My assumption was this is before the Calypso like short trek.
Oh, interesting.
Not very much, not far. Mm-hmm. Because I think in the Calypso short trek, Zora was in a cloud. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't anything around when they opened up the view screen. We saw a Federation headquarters in tatters. So I was like, my guess is that this happened, like Calypso happens just shortly after that, where she moves away to somewhere, but it's in the same relative time period. But yeah, I didn't think we were gonna get this the return of that character. But man, I was like, wow, this, it all makes sense. We wanted to know what happened. like that was the thing with Calypso, was where was everybody? What happened to him? Mm-hmm. And they gave us a little bit of a hint. And I was mm-hmm. like, for that, thank you.
I'm going to be very curious if and when, because yeah, my read on that was the same as yours, is that this was probably, this might, if this is how they're going to tie it in, this is the Calypso timeline, but they, it, just before, because either, because yeah, you, they were in a cloud, and also Zora says, like, the captain ordered me to stay here. Right. For like 1,000 years or whatever. My original thought, actually, this is just my wild speculation, so there's no real basis for this, but my wild speculation for that is those short treks when that came out were all meant to be leading into Discovery Season 2. And I do wonder if that was Calypso then was some remnant of the original plan for the Discovery Season 2 finale, where instead of them Discovery going through the wormhole into the future, the crew went into the future, but then the ship had to physically stay. And then that's just sort of a remnant of an idea that they like released the short trek, but then they changed it when they got to the finale because, like, oh, for some reason that didn't work for X, Y, and Z reason. And now they're kind of stuck trying to backfill it a little bit. So that's my wild, that's speculation. So that may not be true, but it's just, it kind of fits what they were doing at the time, considering all the other season two ones tied in. So that being said, this would be a kind of elegant way to kind of say, you know, it happens in this timeline. Maybe it will still happen by the end of the season. We'll see. And there'll be some sort of, you know, something that happens that sort of pays it off. Or they could just go and say, yeah, Calypso happens in that timeline. But, you know, by the end of the season, they changed the timeline. So it didn't actually happen.
So. Yeah. Oh, the magic of sci-fi. I also like Chippy's answer here. It's like Zora says, or is this another dream? Was Calypso a Zora dream?
Yeah, that's another way that they could have answered that too. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That's fun.
Yeah.
I want to come back a little bit to the Breen, and I've been always fascinated with them and this idea that Locke could potentially be Breen is super interesting to me. But I'm wondering if they're, I feel like most other seasons we've gotten kind of this big bad moment, and I know we have our baddies, if you will, with Maul and Locke, but they don't feel like big bad yet. And so I'm like, are they our big bad, or is the Breen being propelled to become our big bad by the time we get to probably a big space fight at some point this season?
Yeah, I think two things. Like, one, I'm going to be curious to see how they do the Breen, if they bring them in, and if they give an answer to like what they are or what they look like, because that was the big mystery in Deep Space Nine when they came in, that we never saw their face. And potential spoilers, this, they're non-canon, so they probably won't use it. But one of the post-Deep Space Nine books kind of gave this interesting answer of, again, non-canon answer now, that the Breen were actually a bunch of different species, and they use the helmet to sort of ubiquitize them and say, oh, once you become part of this, you are Breen, like we are all one, but they're actually a bunch of different species that have sort of joined together.
So Borg-like of them.
Yeah, exactly. But very much more like, oh, we all become very utilitarian. Like, this is all like for the group, which I'd be curious to see if they do that for this, or, you know, Discovery will, because Discovery plays with like identity a bunch. So like, maybe that'll be part of it. Yeah. And if Locke is a Breen, I'd be curious to see how that ties in as well, with the Breen being such a big part of the season. Like, is he working for them? Is he not? Like, there's a lot of, again, there's a lot of interesting threads to pull there. But I just, it goes back to what I said when we were first talking about Maul and Locke, is this, I just need more. Because, yeah, it does feel like they're being set up for the big bad, but it's just sort of, it's little seeds, it's little sprinklings, as you said, Clyde. And I need some bigger, like more dots to be connected to really be able to say anything definitively.
Totally.
Yeah, I don't think they're quite the big bad. I also don't see them, like the thing about Bonnie and Clyde was, and not me or my friend Bonnie, but you know, when you think about Bonnie and Clyde, they were together. Like, they were ride or die together. They wanted to rob together, they loved together, and then the idea is that they would die together. I'm not buying that with these two, right? And as much as they're trying to get us to feel like Locke is so into Maul, I'm wondering if he has ulterior motives. And I think the whole idea of him being Breen, I think that there's going to be a split between them. And I think it's going to be more complex. I just look at this this team of writers and producers and go, yeah, you're setting us up. You're almost trying to lull us into this sense of security when we look at them and going, oh, that's it. I love the idea that the Breen is the big bad. It's almost as though when we think about, was it like season three? Maybe, yeah, I think it was season three where we really had Osyra. Mm-hmm. Like ultimately, whatever that guy's name was in the beginning, he wasn't the big bad. Osyra right. was the big bad. I don't know that we've been truly introduced to the big bad, which I think is the Breen. And I think there's going to come a point where Maul has very clear motives of what she's trying to do. Like there's a sense of identity of who she is and a little bit of vengeance. I don't know that we've truly seen Locke's like motivation yet. And I think it's going to cause them this
his love of Maul.
Yeah. I mean, yes, he loves her, but I think he's going to be forced to decide between his love of Maul and his identity as a Breen. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be this split. And I think that's where we're going to see Maul kind of reform, rehabilitated, go back to book and who she is mm-hmm. versus kind of Locke going to, and maybe that causes him so much anger and vengeance that he brings the Breen against the Federation. Yeah. He's the catalyst.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Yeah. And I wonder how much they're trying to set up any kind of like lore or like enemies as we like end season five and move into Academy as it like is in the same time period. And like knowing that the things that they set up here are going to have repercussions into the next show. I think it'll be really interesting to see how they kind of wrap that up.
To that point, Mariah, I like that too. I'm guessing that whatever the resolution is, we don't see an end to the Breen. We yeah. see an end to a battle. But I think the Breen might be the big bad in the background to the Academy series.
And we just rehash Deep Space Nine and everyone is happy.
Pretty much. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That would be fun. I just want to go back to our Comedy Beats MVP, which is Jet Reno, which I feel like we've touched on a few times. But I loved when Reno saves Rainer in that hallway and is just like, be careful. It's just like, it reiterates every time. I have this theory. I think any movie that Tom Cruise is in, you could replace with Tig Notaro and it would be an exceedingly better movie.
So kind of just do that Zack Snyder Army of the Dead thing or just replace yes. just CGI her in, do the whole thing.
CGI her in.
As you say that, all I can see is Tig Notaro hanging off the side of a cliff with one hand.
And like, I don't need her to actually do imagine. That. You could just CGI her in.
Just have her do like the what was it? The heli jump from
on the motorcycle.
Yeah. Oh my
That's
God.
Hilarious.
Like I could easily see her in that, like, did like saying to what's his face, Superman, be like, did you just reload your arms?
Yes, exactly.
Or oh god, sorry, last one, the one movie where it was Tom Cruise like slides in his underwear,
risky business.
Yes. I could easily see Tig Notaro doing that.
Exactly, this proves my point. Just, I'm gonna, you know, I'm not, I don't love the use of AI in artwork, but if someone was to make a reel of just replacing Tom Cruise with Tig Notaro, I would not be mad at it.
He would be yeah, livid.
And I'd love it.
Here
him
for
and
it.
His weird him. Couch jumping and crazy yes. cakes.
And Scientology, always fun.
In Scientology. Never mind. I was like, I was going to go down a tangent. Yeah, I drove that, past
that's a, that's yeah. a dark, the Scientology stuff is a dark rabbit hole.
It's a dark rabbit hole.
That's a different podcast.
a very different one. I drove past the Scientology Center that's by the University of Texas. And I don't know, Clyde, if you've seen it in the last like 5 years. It's gigantic now. It's crazy. They got all these big glass windows.
Really?
It truly looks like an evil lair. Like it just looks crazy.
No, I haven't seen the last 5 years. The last time I checked, it's this building that you barely even notice because all other buildings around it were like big.
It is noticeable now. It is
the
crazy.
One in LA I've driven past. That one also is very noticeable, especially for LA. That they got space, which is premium for LA.
That giant purple building. Yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, that tangent is done.
Yay, weird cults with money.
Weird cults with money. I mean, isn't Star Trek just another weird cult with money?
Yeah, I honestly wish it had Scientology money.
That would be nice. Yeah. We would get so many more seasons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I do, you know, getting us back on track a little bit, because I thought Jet Reno was amazing.
What do you mean, Clyde?
Isn't that my role in this show, is to help us not go too far? No, but I really did like Jet Reno, and her fighting Osiris henchmen was a great touch, and just incredible. And I felt like she was doing it with like a licorice in her hand, like the entire time. It was amazing. So I enjoyed that.
I need more of the Rainer Reno friendship, because I didn't know I needed it until that scene. And then I saw that scene, I'm like, oh, I could totally see these two being besties in like a weird odd couple sort of situation. Like that would be such a great, great fun.
She's not afraid of him. And it's beautiful. Like everybody else, even Tilly, who shouldn't be afraid of him. They just look at him like, oh my goodness. But she doesn't even bat an eye. Like, I love that. I love
last
that
time
swagger.
They gave you chips for this, you know.
Yeah.
Bring that energy into all of it. I know we probably won't get a ton of it over the rest of the season, but I hope we get a little bit more of it, because I just like that dynamic.
Yeah, it would be fun to have like a Stamets Reno Rainer away mission, just because I think it would be pure chaos in the most beautiful way. It would have been a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I loved so much about this episode. I could just like every little jump I thought was such a fun like trip down memory lane. We've talked about fire emoji book. I did want to bring up that moment, which again, Sonequa Martin-Green, just like hats off, like the way that she had to be like, oh, I have to love you in this moment for this to be believable. And I felt like it scared her, because she remembered that she does love him.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see those abs?
That's when it's like, all right, let's deal with this emotional turmoil, because those abs.
No, but seriously, I mean, the way I looked at this is, you're in the situation where you have this person that for whatever reason, you're like, hey, look, it's too emotional. Like you did something. Like, hey, we need to break up. And she finds herself in the situation where she's back in the past before he did whatever he did, right? So this is before that. And he's showering her with affection. And she's looking at him, and she has to play the part a little bit. And then she's looking at him, and she's like, thinking about the fact that in the present he's reformed, and he's still giving her kind of that affection. She's looking at him and she's going like, yeah, like I still have these feelings for you. And it doesn't hurt that it's like, damn, you're fine. Like all of those things make it like hard to just like, you could see her going, I am having a hard time to concentrate. If there wasn't this clock going off, I might stay here and just partake in this just a little bit. I gotta go.
I made a really obscene joke when she's like, I have to be somewhere in 4.5 minutes. I was like, baby, you only need 4.5 minutes.
I thought the same thing.
So we got 4 minutes.
I thought like it's almost as though I was looking at him and he was thinking, well, I mean, what do you want to do with the other minute and a half? Like, like we can get this party started right now. I ain't even got a shirt on.
Same as a few seconds. Yeah, I agree. Because I always think, I mean, jokes aside, like, I always think about, like, relationships are all about behavior patterns and how we build behavior patterns with people. And Book, when he kind of did the whole stuff with the DMC and with, what was it, mini Elon Musk dude, Ryson guy, I forget his name, last season, he, like, betrayed that. And so, like, it's difficult for Burnham and Book to both, and also because of that and because of the time, like, get back into a behavior pattern that feels comfortable. Like, it feels weird, so that, because that behavior pattern is disrupted, and there's this, that history. And so seeing this episode where she's like, oh, I remember what this behavior pattern was like, I kind of have to play it for a few minutes to be able to get through this and remember how easy it was at that time, it starts to, like, rebuild those mental pathways and behavior patterns in her. And so it'll be interesting to see, like, how she brings that back to the relationship in the present day. Like, can you rebuild those same behavior patterns once they've been disrupted in such a way and the trust has been hurt in such a way that you don't know if you can trust those patterns anymore? So,
yeah.
That was the most neurodivergent way to think about relationships.
No, I think it makes total sense. And, like, I mean, like he said, seeing Ash again would have just been more than enough to convince Michael that she shouldn't do, she couldn't do better than Book. those behaviors in our past selves and how we interact with the people that know us the best, even at our worst.
Poor Ash Tyler, the character Ash that Star Trek forgot.
I know. I wanted to also point out they Reno at the Vesper Martini exchange in that moment says, you know, you owe me a drink at Red's. And I feel like they're, like, gaslighting us into believing that this bar has always been named Red's.
Just, like, definitely named Red's.
Yeah, it hasn't been. About.
I was like, have I'm ever named this bar? But I'm ready for all of the fun, like, activations at Star Trek conventions and at cons where you can go have a drink at Red's Bar in the same way where we could at 10 Forward.
Like, as much as I love Quark's Bar, it is the sexiest bar in Star Trek. It is really good. So, though I will say, it feels a bit offensive that there's just a Ferengi as the bartender there. It's like, oh, we're going to assign the Ferengi to run the bar. Come on.
I know. I was like, have we seen many Ferengi in Discovery? Yeah. I mean, maybe a few at, like, the big, like, meetings, you know, which I guess, like, great. But yeah, it would be nice to maybe make that a full fleshed out character. Anything else y'all want to chat through this episode? I mean, it was a great time. I loved it. I loved all the weird science that they threw at us to tell us that this is how this would work, which I'm sure half of it's, like, based in reality and the other half is just, like, fun Star Trek nonsense, but it was a good time.
I will say, I just to call that out, because you said that there is the scene where they're all in, like, whatever, Deck 13 talking about the science of it. It's like, oh, it resets, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I sat there, I'm like, this feels like a scene our mutual friend Dr. Aaron worked on. I text her. I was like, did you work on this scene? She's like, yeah, we went over that a bunch of different times because they kept changing it for whatever reason. She didn't tell me anything specific, but she just let me know, like, apparently they had multiple different versions of how the time travel worked. I'm like, I was like, that's a Dr. Aaron helping scene. I could tell.
Yeah, I always like when I know, like, on shows like Grey's Anatomy, when, like, a writer is going through to write the dialogue, they'll just put like medical speak when they need to, like, have real things inserted later. And I was like, I wonder if the writers are just like Trek jargon, like, as they're writing scripts.
Oh, sorry for listeners, in case you don't know, our Dr. Aaron is Dr. Aaron McDonald, who's the science advisor for Star Trek, who's a mutual friend of all of ours. She tells me that sometimes they just put in the script, like, scientific stuff for Dr. Aaron here. Especially on Lower Decks, apparently they do that a decent amount.
She's been, like, on the show.
She's in Prodigy, and then she's referenced in Lower Decks at one point.
No, I mean, she's been on our pod before, so our listeners are familiar.
Yeah, I think Jesse and Aaron, I think, have been on episodes together on our podcast. So
I think they are one. I appreciate Dr. Aaron, who typically will fill in for me when I am on a away mission.
It's a good time. I love our big old happy Trek family of nerds. We're the best. I'm like, excited for the next. I'm just excited for every next episode. I'm like, I haven't been this excited in a while. I'm like searching for, like, ooh, I want the next trailer. Like, I'm ready. I want to watch all the, like, behind the scenes. I'm having a ball.
I will say I did like when we were there on the bridge for kind of early Discovery, looking at Detmer in particular, look at Burnham, because while a lot of them have experience with her, like Detmer was on the bridge when Burnham did that mutiny. So their relationship early on was like rough. Saru forgave her a little bit early. Detmer was like, if I'm alone in a turbo lift with you, I might stab you. Like it felt daggers. So to see the look on her face when Burnham walks in and she's wearing this red kind of uniform and they're like, you're a captain? I don't think so. That I thought, like, that whole setup was just really well done. Like, to really believe, like, more than just, please believe me. Like, there was venom in the room. Like, I love that. I thought it was really just well architected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. No one wants a right hook from Owo any time of day.
Nope. Like, whoa.
Oh, whoa, you better note.
Oh, wow, whoa, Shakun, as she's known.
Oh, wow, wow, Shakun, indeed. All right, y'all. Well, you can find us back here again next week talking more Discovery. Jesse, anything coming up that you want to plug and or promote?
Yes, I will. Sadly, some depressing stuff, but important stuff. So this Saturday on my main channel, I have a very big video that'll be coming out. That'll be part two of a series, but you can watch it sans the part one. That will be going into how anti-trans rhetoric is an integral part of growing fascism and fascistic rhetoric, and how anti-trans bigotry is used as a funnel into more far-right thought. So it's a kind of a darker video, but one that I think is very important to understand how anti-trans rhetoric is being wielded today and has also been wielded in the past. So yeah, dark subject, but an important one. So please check out that video, because that one took a lot of work in both physically and mentally. That'll be on my main channel, Jesse Gender. If you want more, then that channel also has a bunch of video essay stuff that is a lot more fun as well. So please go subscribe there. Secondary channel, Jesse Gender After Dark, where I do news, reviews, reactions. I'm doing reviews of every single episode of Star Trek Discovery on my own over there as well. I'll be doing Doctor Who and Star Wars Acolyte too. And then I have my own podcast called Jumpgate that I always keep creating to mention, which is a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. We're just starting season 5 now. And then I'm on Nebula, which is the streaming service that is making my movie identities. We are finishing off VFX literally right after I finish this podcast. I have to watch a cut of the VFX cut to QC it so I can send off to the color. So movie's getting close to being finished. We'll be able to announce a trailer and a release date in the near future. So get excited for that.
You know, sometimes I think I'm busy and then I hear you talk, Jesse.
I don't sleep. It's fine. It's okay.
Yeah. That's bananas. But yes, please go subscribe and check out all of Jesse's videos. They are fantastic and amazing and so important and helpful. And great explainers if you need to just like send pieces of media to friends or family when they're like, I don't get this thing. You're just like, here you go.
Yeah. They're long, but I try to be comprehensive. So
very comprehensive. Yeah. Clyde, anything from you these days? I saw there was a This Is Us rewatch coming with the cast of This Is Us, and I thought of you, Clyde.
Yes. I was like, okay, so the people who are still trickling in and watching that podcast of mine, and that's going to go down to zero as they watch the cast go and do their thing. No, it should be interesting and fun. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where when you do a podcast, an after show podcast, you're always wondering at what point will the actors, producers, and writers jump in and just crush you. And oddly and enough, it happened like, yeah, 2 years after the show ends, so not bad. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. I'll definitely tune in for that. I think that kicks off in May. Mike Moody Garcia and I are still doing the Intergalactic Pod, where we are doing Stargate SG-1. So I think we're in the second, maybe third episode of season 2. So it's starting to get good. So if you're interested in Star science fiction TV, you can just add Stargate to your Star Trek and come hang out with Mike and I as we nerd out over more sci-fi.
See, I Stargate, the franchise, I adore, though I'm always a big Atlantis fan, but I want someone to do like an in-depth review of the animated show that existed, ooh, the Stargate Infinity. It was so 2000s. Listeners, please, for just to give yourself joy in life, just go look up Stargate Infinity theme song. It is the most 2000s theme song I've ever heard in my life. It's like they explain the plot of the whole show. It's like da-da-da-da-da. It's fantastic. Like, just bring yourself joy. So every time I hear Stargate, which is a franchise I love, like, I always think of that theme song and it brings me joy. So
I'm immediately gonna look this up as soon please as we're do done streaming.
It's wonderful.
It's gonna be so
Jesse, I think much like you, Mike was he's a hardcore Atlantis fan, never mm-hmm. watched an episode of Stargate SG-1. So he's going back, and so it's kind of like I've seen SG-1 more times than I'm willing to admit on a pod. and so we're kind of going through it, and he's got that, oh wow, wait, will we see this character again? And I'm like, nope.
yeah I adore all parts of the Stargate franchise, like even Universe. People hate on Universe, but I enjoy it for what it was, but Atlantis is my favorite one. Like, gotta love by Atlantis, but Stargate SG-1 is also fantastic. So
fun times. My parents used to have all of those on DVD. I remember that as growing up. Every single episode. That is it for us tonight, y'all. We will see you next time. Live long and prosper. Bye-bye.